What's going on, Lakers fans? D-Mac here. We're here with a live edition of the Lakers 24-8 podcast, and we're here to get you ready for Game 4. Big Game 4 coming up tonight. Lakers, Grizzlies, they have an opportunity to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the series. Teams that take a 3-1 lead win that series by a 95% clip. As always, I'm joined by my guys to my left. This is Mr. Noah Camras. Go follow him at Noah Camras. Read his stuff on alllakers.com. And to my right, Young Lotto. He brings that Lotto. Fire. Mr. Noise by Noel, Noel Sanchez. You guys ready to talk some Laker basketball? You guys ready for Game 4?
Yes, sir.
We've been ready. Game we need that, four. That win.
3-1 lead incoming.
3-1 lead incoming. Yeah, so we just rewinding a little bit to Game 3. What we can learn from Game 3 that can help the Lakers in Game 4? Because you really couldn't have gotten off to a better start if you're the Lakers. They had a 35-9 lead to end the first quarter. It was the lowest scoring quarter for any NBA team during the 2022-2023 season. But you saw what happened in the fourth quarter. The Grizzlies, they made a little comeback. Ja Morant, he was cooking with gas. 22 straight points. He's making threes. And you saw this Lakers team defensively. They started to just kind of fall off a little bit. Almost reminded me of Usain Bolt back in the day when he'd be running his sprints and you would see him kind of slow down at the end and kind of smile at his competition. Kind of felt like that was what the Lakers are doing. But what do you make of the little mini collapse the Lakers had? Because they never went within single digits, but what was your take on that, Noah?
Yeah, I mean, that's it right there. You just said it. They never went within single digits. To me, that meant absolutely nothing. That was the Lakers just kind of taking their foot off the gas, which obviously you don't want to do, but as Laker fans, we've seen they never have these like wire-to-wire blowout wins. And the fact that it really never got under single digits, I mean, that is one of the most dominant wins the Lakers have had. So, yes, 100%. It got interesting at the end. It also only got interesting because Ja went just completely insane and dropped 45, couldn't miss from deep. Like, that's not going to happen again. So I don't have any problem with it getting a little closer at the end. At the end of the day, a one-point win is the same as a 35-point win. And all that matters is you get the dub. And the Lakers still won by double digits. They still dominated the first quarter. And then they just cruised the rest of the way, which it's kind of nice in a playoff game to say that you can kind of cruise. And LeBron wasn't even playing a lot of the third quarter. Like, the Lakers were able to get some rest. So I have no problem with it getting close. Obviously, it's nice to see a 30-point win. But 10-point win's the same exact thing.
Finally, playoffs back home.
Yeah.
It's been too
long. They definitely end up with a 111-101 win. But Ja Morant, I mean, he probably is not going to have the same game where he drops 45 points on 13 of 26 shooting. He went 6 from 10 from beyond the arc. But we're talking about a guy who is a below-average three-point shooter, shot 30.7% from three. In 61 games this season, he had made more than 2 three-pointers just 8 times. So it was a little bit of an aberration. Yeah. But, hey, you are a hooper, right? And you know about momentum, right? There is some momentum that carries over in these playoff series. And Ja Morant's going to be playing with a lot of confidence. And also, he knows that, hey, he has to put this team on his shoulders from the start of the game. Yep. Do you think that momentum carries over?
I mean, just from watching the game, I could see that from the beginning when he checked in, he was just playing like a cannonball. He was trying to get into the paint, really show everybody that even though his hand was injured and he missed the last game, that he's still Ja Morant at the end of the day. But he was just struggling because, I mean, when you're that small, you can only jump so high when you're going at the likes of Anthony Davis, Roy Hachimura, LeBron James. If everybody's packing the paint and nobody on your team is hitting shots, like, you're not going to get very far. So, I mean, without a doubt, he's going to carry that same energy like he always does. But the Lakers were obviously going under screens at the end, letting him shoot because he has an injured hand. Like, it's very tough to shoot with a wrap and shoot consistently when you're already not a smooth shooter. So his game is really just to, like, you know, come in and just attack the rim like he was. And I just feel like once the Lakers adjust to that and they keep letting him shoot, like Noah said, he's not going to keep making shots. So he's going to bring the energy. I have no doubt that Dylan Brooks is going to be like hungry after that ejection. But I mean,
the villain.
Yeah. Like, if anything, he helped the team by leaving because he was stinking it up before
horrible.
That. And like, that's my thoughts on Ja. He's going to do his thing, but it's really up to the rest of the Grizzlies if they want to make this like a closer series.
Honestly, if Ja has one more good shooting game today, you think he should just stay with the rap for the rest of his career? Because clearly it's working.
Try to pull up Rip Hamilton, kind of staying with the mask.
Stay with the mask. When, I mean, if it ain't broke, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like AI with the shooting sleeve. That's
exactly
how it got started.
So
I don't know. I think special players like Ja Morant, he's going to be ready. Because at this point, it does feel like he's playing with house money. He knows that this is an undermanned Grizzlies team. They're out Clark. They're out Adams. And he knows that he's going to be able to have a scoring barrage. And it was really a tale of two halves the way they defended him. I mean, you look at that first half. They were tenacious. They were cutting down passing lanes. They were keeping him out of the paint. Second half was a little different, going underneath screens, giving him that three-point shot. To me, I think if the guy is cooking like that, I don't care if you have a big lead. I don't care if his hand is hurt. I don't care if he is a below-average three-point shooter. You send a double. You get the ball out of his hands. But I'll ask you, Noah, how'd you feel about the way Ham opted to guard him? Because we've seen this season Ham letting other players get hot on the this
yeah.
game.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I love the idea of when Jared Vanderbilt is kind of chasing him around, and I really hope we see that from the jump in game four. Yeah. I mean, like you said, you don't want to let him get hot from the beginning of a game. Yeah, he got hot in the second half, in the fourth quarter, when the game was pretty much out of reach and he tried to claw them back. But it was pretty much over at that point. But you don't want to see that happen in the first quarter and have the Grizzlies get out to a big lead. So I want to see Jared Vanderbilt from the jump be picking up full court. Obviously, Vanderbilt's not in there for his offense. I remember before the series, you were saying, Doug, that you were hoping he could kind of hit some of those quarter threes.
Yeah, it's 0 points happening. Last game. Yeah,
it's not going to happen. So his job is only out there to play defense. He has to give it his all, whether he plays 20-something minutes a game. It's all for the defensive side of the ball. So I want to see him pick up Jaw 90 feet. Maybe not 90 because Jaw can run by him. But, you know, pick him up at half court, really make his life difficult, and just expend all of his energy on defense running around with Jaw, and then, of course, having help in the middle. But I just think that's how they should defend Jaw and go over the screens, make him work, have doubles ready. Because, yeah, like you said, he's the guy that's going to beat you. And if he gets hot early, this game could be a lot more difficult. But if you can slow him down in the beginning and make Dylan Brooks shoot, and he's going 3-for-13, the Lakers have a good chance of winning again.
Thanks. Yeah, and you have to deny him the ball as well. I mean, Ja Morant, the way he took over this game, I lost a little bit of confidence in Darvin Ham, because we've seen that throughout this season. When another guy gets hot, Lakers aren't sending doubles. They're not collapsing. Yep. And they had an opportunity to really just attack Ja, and they just let him have his way. And especially when you consider they had already lost Dylan Brooks, which actually turned out to be a good thing for them. Helpful. I think that Ja's going to come out guns a-blazing tonight. And I think he's going to have a big game. But I think the Lakers still have a chance.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to have a big game. But, yeah, so next we're going to switch gears to the villain of the series, Dylan Brooks, and the series that he's having. Because, like you mentioned, he did not get suspended, which is unfortunate for the Grizz because they have played better without him on
the
court.
Yeah,
you saw LeBron have that chat with him before the game. To me, that was a calculated move. That was telling the basketball world, hey, look, we're going to handle this on the court. He has poked the bear, so to speak, and he got the bear from Anchorman. Right, he got the big bear. They really attacked him. But do you think he's going to be a non-factor for the rest of the series?
I mean, he's never going to be a non-factor because you know he's going to. I mean, he's going to do his best to get in LeBron's head. He's going to try to play great defense. He's going to. I mean, he's still a good perimeter defender. We're not going to take that away from him. He's a pretty big body. As far as the shooting goes, it's hard to predict where someone's going to be a non-factor or not because Dylan Brooks is the kind of guy who he's a microwave. If he gets hot, he can start getting a shot going, but he's been ice cold, and it definitely doesn't help that the fans are booing him every time he touches the ball, which I love to see. You hope as a Laker fan he continues to shoot the way he's shooting, 3-for-13 in game three. Like you said, the Grizzlies were better when he got ejected. I saw a tweet on Twitter. It was from a Wob, and he was like, can the Lakers elect to waive the ejection and let Dylan Brooks stay in the game? It's like, honestly, like, yeah, I mean, that would have been better for them. So he is the kind of guy who could get hot. And, I mean, if he gets a few shots going, he's a pretty good shooter. But if that Laker crowd still keeps going loud, getting in his head, you hope that kind of keeps him struggling. Yeah. And you know he's not going to stop shooting. He's the kind of guy who's going to keep shooting no matter what. So you hope that those just keep clinking off. And I saw Tristan Thompson before Dylan Brooks got ejected after a corner miss from Dylan Brooks. Tristan Thompson went like this on the bench, which is just, I mean, you love to see that. So hopefully he stays this cold. But, you know, he's still somebody you got to watch because he can play.
Yeah, I know. He's played pretty terribly this season, as this series as a whole, averaging 11 points on 32% shootings, on 3% shooting. He's not Dylan Brooks. He's Dylan Bricks. Okay, that's what I'm calling him for the rest of this series. I think the way he got ejected when he did, I do think it was a little bit soft. I think it was about the reputation. I think it was about LeBron. I think I saw him yelling to the ref, you know, he got all balls or whatever he was saying. It was a low blow. But what is your take? I want to ask you this one, Noel. He said that he's being made a villain. And he said, quote, they're making me a villain.
Yeah, the media is.
What are your thoughts on that? That, hey, we're contributing to that, right? We're the media, right? I guess we're making him a villain.
We're the problem here, guys.
Yeah. We are part of the problem. What were your thoughts on that comment from Dylan Brooks?
I mean, it's kind of like a two-sided sword in this sense because, I mean, we all see what he's doing on Instagram. He's out there calling LeBron old. He's saying that you're not good until you drop 40 on me. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. It's not just us. It's not just TNT. It's not just Stephen A. Smith calling him a villain. He wants it, and he accepted this right before the playoffs. Like, I get him saying that he's willing to take on the challenge of LeBron James and the Lakers because, I mean, I respect that, you know? Just, like, loving the game of basketball, you always want to see nobody back down from a team. We've seen, like, different teams like the Kings, the Clippers, dodge the Lakers before, obviously, but he was saying that the Grizzlies were up for the challenge. So, I mean, I respect it in that sense, but when he's out here, like, going up to one of the greatest players in the game and just going at him and then punching him below the belts, which is obviously dirty, it's not the media that is doing it. He's playing a big role in this. And I don't like how he's out there just saying that it's everybody else.
I have a quick question here. Was it the media who said that he wants that they want to see LeBron James in a 7-game series? Was it the media that called LeBron James old? Was it the media that said that he pokes bears and that he can't trust someone until they drop 40 on him? Like, I don't get how he's saying that the media is creating him a villain when he is very clearly living and kind of putting his work into being this villain role on this team. He's always been that way. He's always been trash-talking the Warriors. He's always been trash-talking the guys who are much better at basketball than him. And he's doing that same thing this year. His job is to be that irritant. Like you said before this year, he's trying to, like, make his name off of somebody else. Yeah. And he's doing that with LeBron now. He already did it with the Warriors. Like, he's trying to be that guy who's like, oh, I'm going to get in this guy's head. And when we win, I'm going to be able to talk all that talk. Yeah. Well, he made a mistake because he's doing that before a series even starts against one of the best players of all time. And now when he starts losing, now he's kind of backtracking and being like, you're making me a villain. Yeah. I'm not doing anything. When after game three, he declined to speak to the media, which is really ironic considering all he does is talk. And then after, when they ask him to talk at the end of game three, he says, no, I'm not talking.
So. And it's fine. You know, it's fine if somebody wants to take on that role, because I think it's good for the game. It's good for narratives. You know, at the end of the day, basketball is entertainment. But, like, don't blame the media then when you do something like this.
And also, don't you notice that the guys who always play that role, him, Patrick Beverly, they never win anything? I mean, I don't know. I mean,
Draymond's the only one that actually wins,
but that's because he knows to talk after his team has won stuff. It's not like he was talking before they went on this dynasty run. I mean, no one even, like, cared about Draymond before that. And then after they win, you start talking. You don't talk before you win something. I mean, it's...
Absolutely. Like, every Batman needs a Joker. You need that villain angle.
Exactly.
And I think to a degree, yes, the media and the fans have played a part. He said, the media is making me a villain. The fans making me a villain. That just creates another persona on me. Bruh, you're at WWE matches looking like a heel guy with your hair down, with a chain. Don't act like you weren't embracing this just two games ago. The issue I have is he can't back up this big, tall mountain of trash that he's talked. Yep. If he was a Draymond Green, a Ron Artest, a player like a Dennis Rodman, guys that could talk smack but back it up, then I think you have some respect. But he's falling in that category of the Rajah Bells, the
Patrick Beverly,
the Dante Jones types, guys that have talked a big game, have been an irritant to a superstar, but that's all they're going to be remembered for. I think from a business decision standpoint, this doesn't make a lot of sense for a guy that isn't a contract year, that's putting himself in this position that looks like he's a detriment to his team's success. And if you look at LeBron's numbers when he's been guarded by Dylan Brooks,
barbecue chicken,
26 points, zero turnovers, 61.1% from the field, shooting 42.9% from three. So,
He cracked the code on stopping LeBron, right?
Yeah. To me, it almost reminds me when Russ was talking about Pat Beverly. Like, he fooling y'all. He's out there doing nothing.
He's running in circles.
He's just getting cardio. Dylan Brooks getting cardio.
Tony Snell. He's literally putting up Tony Snell numbers right now.
Out there for straight cardio right now.
Yeah, he's literally just getting his steps in.
Yeah. So, to me, I think he's going to be a non-factor in this series. I think defensively, he's tried to use his physicality against LeBron James. It hasn't worked. And at the end of the day, for a young Memphis team that is trying to handle the glitz and glamour of the Los Angeles Lakers, he's only hurt them.
Here's the thing. Like, this is the second year in a row where the Grizzlies have been a high seed and they have all these expectations, and you kind of see the youth and the immaturity come back to haunt them.
Exactly.
And this is the second straight year it's happened. And it's nice when you dominate regular seasons, but the postseason is so much different. And the Grizzlies are a prime example of how important it is to have veteran leadership on that team. Like, they are just a prime example of what happens when you don't have a veteran.
And their one, like, really seasoned veteran that, like, could lead them is out, Steven Adams.
Steven Adams. He's never really been, like, a big, like, locker room leader. Yeah. Like, I mean, like,
he's just a knowledgeable guy everybody likes.
But, like, so it's not like someone who's going to, like, yell at John Morant for doing what he did in a strip club, or yell at Dylan Brooks for, like, talking to someone. Like, he's not going to do that. And
quick question, just real quick. There were, like, some tempers, like, flaring in last game. What did you guys think about that? You know, Roy was kind of getting mad. There was some pushes. What did you guys think of that?
It's a bunch of fake tough guy stuff. I mean, in the NBA, it's hold me back. Yeah. I mean, nothing's going to come of it. But I do think Rui, I think one of the storylines that's not getting discussed again was that when Desmond Bain said, can't Rui do it again?
And he's
done it again and again and again. Yeah. So I think that he's poked a bear to an extent, too. And I think that Rui's definitely made a big statement. But there's definitely some bad blood amongst these teams. They clearly don't like each other. I think for these young Grizzlies players, I think there's a good learning experience for them. I mean, you saw OKC back in the day. They had to take some L's before they legit legitimately were championship contenders. But really, for the most part, this is an old man's league, right? Yeah. Steph Curry, before he really got going, 25, 26 years old. You're seeing this Kings team now. De'Aaron Fox, unfortunately, he sucks. Hurts his finger. Really, and DeMontis Sabonis. They've been in the league 4 or 5 years until they really have been able to really catch that momentum, be legitimate contenders. So, yeah, I mean, that's what we're realizing. I think I texted you. I was like, they need some more vets. This Grizzlies team needs to go out there and get some players that can help get them over the top.
And just guys who can, like, talk to their young guys and, like, mentor them. And, like literally, like, if they sign, like, not Tristan Thompson, but, like, a Tristan Thompson-type guy who's been there before, and it's like, this is how you should go about the NBA postseason, because it's much different than a regular season game. Like, this is a different animal. And that's now, if they lose to Lakers, that's two straight years that they've crumbled as one of the top seeds in the West.
True.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the last point for until we move on here is it's tougher to get role players going to the Grizzlies, veterans, because it's not really a free agent destination. No. It's not one of those coastal cities like the Lakers or New York or Boston or Miami. So it's not as easy, but I think that's what they're going to take away from this series if they can't advance. But next, we're going to switch gears to Anthony Davis and what this team does when he's not out on the floor. Because when he's on the floor, he's an absolute menace. Yeah. Anthony Davis, he has shown Triple J who is the real D-boy. And I think it's kind of hilarious because he actually played more minutes than Triple J this season. So it's not a minutes thing.
Yeah.
And I think he's, to me, it reminds me of you kids before you even born back in the 90s when it was the Rockets versus the Spurs. And Hakeem, he told his teammates that David Robinson had his MVP, and he went out there and he absolutely destroyed him. I think Anthony Davis is taking it personally against Triple J, showing what he can do. He is Gumby out there. He's so fluid. The way he can move his body and contort his body, he's averaging 6.7 stocks per game.
Insane.
And
Insane.
He's just fantastic. But I think the one concern I have, we saw in Game 2, you can't rest on your laurels if you're Anthony Davis. Game 2 had 13 points. Wasn't his best game.
Yeah.
Even in game 3, goes 11 for 24. Not as efficient, but still 31 points, 17 boards, only 3 turnovers. What do you think he needs to do to just keep this momentum and be able to put 2 back-to-back really nice games together, Noah?
I mean, continue the hopefully Darvin Ham's play calling of getting AD the ball down low, making double teams come, making the right play, and just continuing to dominate. I mean, yeah, JJJ was a depoy. He's not playing like it right now. I mean, yeah, he's getting his stock numbers, which he does. But Anthony Davis is he's beasting down there in the paint. He's getting offensive rebounds. He's getting putbacks. He's making things happen. I think the Lakers will not lose a game in this series if Anthony Davis scores more than 30 points in it, because that just shows how dominant they are being in the paint. So Anthony Davis has to keep doing that. He has to keep playing angry. And on the defensive side of the ball, he has to just keep altering shots. He's been so incredible at just making just issues happen in the paint. And when he's in there, it is hard for the Grizzlies to score in the paint.
Yep.
So just continuing to do that, just getting everywhere, just being losing your length to just tip balls, tip whatever is coming your way, knock down passes, I mean, whatever it is. I mean, he's just been so dominant in the paint. And yeah, I completely agree with what you said. He's looking at JJJ saying, this man has my DPOY award. I deserve it. And this series, Anthony Davis is playing by far like the DPOY. So props to him, but he can't slow down now.
Yeah, when he's playing engaged, when he's immersed, I mean, he's an absolute problem. And for him, it's just about maintaining this level of intensity. But from the defensive side of the ball, what are you seeing, Noel?
I mean, I'm just seeing, like I said, I really think that I wanted him to make a statement and show that it was his pain to lose in this game. And, you know, no disrespect to JJJ, because he's been a great young player. Incredible, but he's not an Embiid. He's not a Giannis. He's not a Jokic. He's not up there with the best bigs in the league right now. So if he even got close to the level that Anthony Davis is playing right now, I think that would be a big problem. I think it was just very important for AD to go out there and show that he's the best big in the league when healthy. And, you know, there's really no other way to put that, whether it be John Moran coming in. And we saw that last game in the beginning, he wasn't letting anything fly. He was jumping vertically. He was making sure to block, alter anything that came in. Even likes the Desmond Bane when he tries to get in there. Just that's the biggest key to the Lakers finishing out this series, AD staying strong on both ends of the floor, but specifically keeping the Grizzlies to, like, a crazy low first quarter again.
And he's staying out of foul trouble, which is pretty good. I mean, he almost picked up his fourth, and then Darvin Ham, that really good challenge when AD got all ball, and it was a good call by the ref. But, like, he's, I mean, if he got into foul trouble, the Lakers would probably be in trouble.
Yeah.
And he's been, like you said, doing a good job of staying up, defending without fouling, and still getting his stock numbers without getting up into those foul range that's going to put the Lakers in trouble. So he's doing a really good job of that, and he has to keep doing that.
Yeah, and I think we're witnessing in real time a narrative shift. And he should be elevated past guys, in my opinion, like Joel Embiid. I think if you look at his numbers as a whole, I mean, he is underrated at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, he should be in the conversation with Giannis, with Embiid, with Jokic as the best big man in the league. If you look at his numbers last season, he had the top rebounding average in the league, led the league in total second chance points, First guy to ever have a winning record without LeBron. Had the best record out West post-break. Top five in blocks. Had a career high from the field. He had the most 30-10 games, let alone 30-15 games. That was more than Embiid, Joker, or the Freak. So I'm telling you.
With all those injuries he had, too.
With all those injuries, yeah. I'm telling you. Why is this narrative the way it is? But I think he has a great opportunity. I think he can enhance his legacy more than any superstar. I mean, of course, you have guys that can level up. We're talking about a guy that, if he continues to play like this and he maintains this, we're talking about a guy that he should be in the conversation for best player in the league. Stage I really set. Feel that way. Stage it's just about staying healthy.
I love that
man.
Take. No, I love that take.
But next, we're going to talk about Noah's favorite player, Rui Hachimura.
I like Rui, man.
Hachimura's been cooking. I know you like Rui. I'm just messing with you. And look, the reality is, Rui, when he first started with the Lakers, he left a lot to be desired. Yeah. I mean, he got benched for one game. But to his credit, he's absolutely turned things around. Give Phil Handy a 10-year contract, okay? He's already helped his three-point shot. Insane. I want to see him improve his handles a little bit, especially on the break there.
Handle on the break. When he took off on that fast break, I'm like, there's no chance that they are scoring here.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Those big man handles.
Yeah, he does not have those handles.
But eye-popping numbers this series. In three games, 21.7 points per game, 67% from the field, shooting 75% from beyond the arc. Look, Rob is short for robbed, as in what Rob Pelinka did to the Washington
Kendrick
Wizards.
None in 3 seconds. Baby.
None in 3 second round picks. I mean, he straight up got their GM fired, bro. Okay? But what the question I have for you guys, we know how excellent he's playing. I think we're pretty confident that he can continue to sustain this to a degree. I mean, you can't expect 29-point games from Rui, but do you want to see more minutes for Rui? Do you want to see him get out there on the floor a little more? Because we saw that lineup with Rui and LeBron, and we saw Memphis go big with Tillman and Triple J, and they were basically conceding layups at the rim. What do you think they should do with Rui's minutes out there on the floor, Noah?
The one issue, like you just said, is those times when it's just Rui and LeBron out there, and the Lakers are going small, and even though JJJ and Tillman aren't big, they're bigger than Rui and LeBron, so you kind of hope to get one of those guys in foul trouble early, so then you can kind of have a bigger runway for Rui minutes, because he's proven that he is really one of the Lakers' best scorers in this series. And 29, 20, and 16 in the three games, I mean, that's really as good as it gets from an off-the-bench guy. He's been historically good numbers in game one, and he's shooting so efficiently, which is just not what we saw from him earlier when he came to the Lakers. He was not able to get those threes to drop, really flat shots. His mid-range started to improve, but now he's just hitting everything with ease, and he's really been one of their best knockdown shooters. So you want to see more minutes from him, especially when the Lakers need a bucket, because now it's not just, you know, throw to Anthony Davis in the post and hope he can get something, or hope Austin Reeves can create a shot. Now it's like, let Rui go to work and let him create some looks. And when he gets to that mid-range, that little fadeaway, like, you know it's going to go in. I mean, you know it's going to go in, which is, like, not what we expected at Rui Hachimura a few months ago. So I do think you want to raise his minutes, but you got to be careful. I mean, if it's a game where you need more offense, you want Rui in there. But if it's a game where you're trying to clog the paint, you can't trust Rui to do that, because he's going to give up layups, like you said. But I do want to see him get more minutes, or at least when he's in the game, put the ball in his hands more. I mean, get him the ball at the top of the key and let him kind of back someone in, or throw him a ball in the low post and let him kind of go to work, because that shot's been money all series long.
I personally want to see him in the starting lineup. I think you put him in that starting lineup and you ride that hot hand. Absolutely for Vando. Vando's providing nothing offensively. Yeah, you're seeing they're sagging off him. But if you look at the metrics, I mean, kind of in during certain stretches, but I think not to the degree. If you look at the net with Rui on the floor, I think Vando has basically been getting cardio out there. I mean, he's been a non-factor completely. He's not Vanderbilt for this, okay? And I think when you throw out Rui out there, the game he's played, playoff Rui is real. Okay, he's only played in 10 playoff games, but he's never shot below 50% in any playoff game or scored less than 10 points. I know you're a big fan of the guy. You're one of the first people that was really pounding your fist on the table saying the Lakers need to re-sign this guy. They can't let him leave. What are your thoughts on how he's evolved? I mean, his shot in particular, you're seeing more arc on it, but what are you seeing from Rui Noel?
I mean, just whenever you see a big man that polished, ever since coming out of college, really, I mean, he was a lottery pick for a reason. Yeah. And the thing is with Rui, I think when he first got to the Lakers, the game was just moving a little too fast for him. Whether it be he was catching the corner and shooting with a little bit of those first Laker game nerves, or like even just going on a fast break with Bron and AD, it's very different than going on a fast break with a Kyle Kuzma, no disrespect to them, and a Bradley Beal. It's just a very different atmosphere. So I think now that he's been able to calm down a little bit, he started seeing his shots fall. And I mean, you know, you're a hooper. You remember back those days at LA Fitness in Fairfax?
I'll take that. I'll take that.
Whenever you would catch a bucket, like, you know, you want to go harder on defense. So I think when he sees those shots fall, just that energy picks up, and we see a fiery Rui. I've been seeing him yell.
I love it. Yeah.
He keeps yelling.
Yeah.
I love that
smirk he does after after all those makes. And also, too, you notice when they go to a timeout, the huddle kind of converges around Darvin Ham. Where does he go? He really goes right to Phil Handy, and you can tell they're breaking things down. Yeah. Like you said, I think the last box that he needs to check off is to kind of fix that handle just a little bit.
He had very, like, just kind of bricks for hands, like something he just can't catch a pass.
And a weak dunk package. And
that one play where he drove in and he jump stopped, and then he waited for the defender to kind of go past him. Like, that's
what you
a pro.
See. You want to see him be big and, like, strong with the ball.
Yeah, and that's a pro read right there. That's all Phil Handy, like 100%. You were saying. Yeah, all Phil Handy. Yeah.
And just going back to what you were talking about earlier with, like, the fiery between, like, the two teams, I love that from Rui. Like, I love that he went and he kind of went at, I don't remember who, John Contra, I think, who pushed him, or whoever, David Roddy, whoever it was who pushed him. He was kind of like, all right, let's, like, he felt the push in the back. Maybe it didn't look as bad on TV, but he felt it.
I think it was the AD thing before that, too, seeing AD get hurt.
And it was, like, kind of building up, and I love that he went in. I mean, you never see that from Rui. Like, Rui is, like, the most, like, calm, like, just kind of play his game, like, not, so when he gets out, like, you can see how much
he's starting to feel like him a little bit.
Yeah, he's starting to feel like he really is one of the best players on that court.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he's taking that like totally just into his game. And so I love seeing him push like that, get that tech, and then kind of laugh about it. Like, how did I get teched up for that? Like, I just got pushed in the back. But I love seeing that from him. And I really think it's, like you said, he's seen his shots go down. He's getting the confidence. And now he's being like, I'm a star on this court right now, and I'm playing like it, so I'm gonna act like it.
Yep. And he has a defined role. They're okay with him shooting that mid-range shot when he's there. Like you said, he's Rui Hishimura right there. He's got more dog than Westminster, and I think that's something that really has really shined with me. I really has made a big impact on me as a player, seeing what he's been able to do. But I think we're going to...
me as a player.
He told me I was a player.
He's a hooper.
He told me I was a hooper.
So you are a callback.
You remember those LA
Finish? You are your game after Rui. Really quickly, I think our DJ producer Cody over there had some comments for us or something, right? Didn't you say you had some things over there for?
I had some comments a little bit earlier. Somebody did ask. You guys just answered it. Whether Rui should start over Vando, and then Craig Osterberg asked, why doesn't Ham play Mo Bamba or Tristan Thompson?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, that's something that we've actually were talking about before this show. I think what they need to let us know is Mo Bamba fully healthy, because you saw Wenyen Gabriel. He gets 1 minute.
Yeah,
this
weird
team does not have the requisite center depth, I think, to really go long, to go and make a deep run through this playoffs unless they find a consistent rotation for centers. But that's a big question I have, because I just think that the thing for Mo Bamba is he healthy? Is it too late to really kind of
ease him back into it?
Yeah, back into the fold. I think that's kind of the big thing.
That's kind of why I thought game three would have been a nice time to do it. Like, considering they had, like, a pretty healthy lead, and just kind of throw them in there just for a few minutes to kind of see what happens. Yeah, clearly something's going on, or they just don't want to kind of mess with what's working, because obviously things are working right now.
Yeah.
As for Tristan Thompson, though, he has one job, and that's to do this.
To mess up the celebration.
Yeah, he's just there to mess up a celebration. Tristan Thompson's not going to play, but no, Mo Bamba's the interesting one, because he was showing some really nice signs early before he got hurt. So, yeah, that's to be something going on, because the Lakers could use some size. And if they go deeper in the playoffs, it'd be the Warriors or Kings next. Maybe we won't need the size there. But then you go to, like, the conference finals against the Suns or the Nuggets, and those teams have some bigs. So you'd probably want some size, especially, you know, I mean, Jokic and DeAndre Jordan, or, you know, DeAndre Ayton. I mean, those are guys you want to match up bigs with. So maybe Mo Bamba's going to get eased in if the Lakers keep moving on. I don't know.
Hopefully we get another, like, big win today, and then we're able to see Mo Bamba get those minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'd love to just see him just get in
there.
It's
tough.
To see
what
happens.
That's christening by fire right there, throwing him into that situation where he's been dealing with injuries. But my thing I keep yelling at the TV is, why doesn't any of these reporters ask Darvin Ham, what's wrong with Mo Bamba?
Yeah.
Can we apply for a...
I was going to say, we got to get out there. We got to get a credential.
One press credential.
Just to go ask why Mo Bamba hasn't
been able to get some minutes. But I mean, we'll switch gears too and talk about Malik Beasley, because I think the big question now, the big topic is, do you shorten this rotation? Because there is ways you can shorten this rotation through, give more minutes to Rui, give more minutes to Reeves, and then you see a little less of Malik Beasley, because he has been essentially a no-show for this series.
Yep.
I mean, if you look at his numbers last game, he struggled mightily. He ends up shooting... going 0-for-2 from the field, no points. He has really struggled. What are your thoughts on Beasley? What do you think they should do with him?
Beasley's playing with no confidence right now, which really sucks because as a shooter, the only thing you have is confidence, yeah. As you know, Doug. And that's the only thing you have.
It's a big impact on me.
But yeah, it's tough to see because he's someone that the Lakers brought in and fans were hoping that he would just come in and shoot the lights out and have some big games. And he's just totally out of it right now from a basketball perspective. So the hope is that I think Darvin Ham's kind of leaving him out there to just figure things out. But clearly he's not figuring things out. I don't want him to go completely out of the rotation. Yeah. I think he should still play a few minutes, get some shots up. Like I said earlier in the series, I said throw Malik Beasley out there. Give him a couple shots. If they drop, great. Let him see what happens. If they don't, it's a quick hook and you kind of let it go like that. So I don't think he should have a DNP. But yeah, there's no reason he should be playing double-digit minutes and putting up two shots. I mean, like, if he's putting up two shots, you know something's not going right because he's a shooter and he should shoot at least like six times a game. So
facts.
If he's not going to get the shots up, he's really just kind of getting cardio out there. He's not even a great defender. I mean, the Lakers have better defenders. So I don't want to see him fall out of the rotation, but I don't want to see him playing like a lot of minutes if he's not even doing the one thing he's supposed to do, which is shoot the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of the issue that I have is he's really such a specialist at this point where if he's not knocking down shots, he doesn't provide any value. Yeah. Whereas someone like Troy Brown, we know that you can throw him in that rotation because he will defend. He will rebound. He will make the occasional three-point shot. But look, you got to make up those 10 minutes. I think you give 3 to Russell, 3 to Dennis, 2 to Reeves, and 2 to Troy Brown Jr., and you shorten that rotation. That's what you see during deep runs. Yeah. But on the other hand, they need a consistent three-point shooter. I think the big thing is can Reeves and Rui and guys like that continue to hit threes and D'Lo.
Start making threes, yeah.
Hey, why is it, we're not a Crystal Geyser sponsor. Take that off there. But what are your thoughts on the rotation and Malik Beasley, Noel?
I mean, yeah, just like you said, in the playoffs, you do need to figure out how to shorten that rotation. Really just get a crop of guys that can just hold it down. And obviously he is not doing that right now, man. Only 13 minutes last game, and it's not a pretty sight. I mean, his shots are looking good, and like I said, they always look like they're going to go in, but they're just not dropping, and that just leads to a big shortage of confidence right now. We're just talking about Roy Hachimura having all the confidence in the world. Well, it looks like he just taking all of it from Malik Beasley because he's out there looking sad on the bench, barely even clapping for his teammates. And that's the one thing that kind of bothers me about him is that we've seen all these other Lakers when they're struggling, they're still up clapping for their teammates, going crazy, hitting the celebration. But he just looks down right now. And I was always a big supporter of him getting re-signed by LA in the offseason, but
$16 million.
Yeah, if he gets if he keeps struggling and if he's not showing that charisma that you need in LA, he needs to have a pretty big turnaround. Yeah,
as of right now,
what's his ex Riz at? Is it lower?
It's pretty low.
He has a $16.5 million.
As of right now,
that's
getting declined so quickly.
And I do think, I mean, look, when you consider 3-point shooting as such a premium, if he could have a game where they're going to see the Malik Beasley game at some point during this playoff series.
My bold prediction was that we're going to see one Malik Beasley.
Hopefully,
game.
Second rounds.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's coming because the Lakers could use one of those fun games out of Malik, especially if it's at home and like the fans really get going.
It'll literally be a blowout if he starts hitting.
Yeah, exactly. It totally would be. So hopefully we see Malik Beasley. But yeah, for now, it's tough to watch. And I know you were kind of talking about potentially seeing Lonnie Walker minutes.
I have a petition going that I'm working on starting to get Lonnie Walker more minutes.
I mean, he can score.
He can score, and he had a really nice hit, a 21-point
Skywalker,
game.
What happened to the Skywalker?
He was fun early in the year.
Well, look, when it comes down to brass tacks, it boils down to the fact the Lakers don't see him as a part of their future. But I'm going to go to producer Cody real quick.
That's Craig Osterberg's question. He says, should Lonnie Walker take a Malik
Craig, you got some great questions, Craig.
Craig, you should join us.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah, Craig Osterberg's the man. Always appreciate you rocking with us. But yeah, with Lonnie Walker and Malik Beasley, what they have in common is they're both high variance players. I mean, they can be hot, they can be cold. From game to game, you just never know what you're going to get from those guys. But I think what it boils down to is they don't trust Lonnie in those spots because he was worked out of the rotation for so long that if you just threw him in there at this stage of the series, you're basically punting on the Malik Beasley experience. And I think that they see a potential catch and shooter that's going to help them throughout this playoff run, whereas Lonnie's going to be more of a ball handler. We know Reeves has handled the ball more. LeBron, they have Shooter, they have D'Lo. So Lonnie really is the odd man out. But if Beasley does continue to struggle and you don't want to shorten this rotation, I think to me the plan has to be like I laid out a few minutes ago, shorten that rotation. Yeah. But if you want to get another guy in, I'd be all for it. Just for the sake
of change. I like Lonnie. I mean, like you said, the difference between Lonnie and Beasley is a shooter. Lonnie is a scorer. So Lonnie kind of needs the ball in his hands to kind of work, get to the hoop. He still is a good shooter, when he gets hot, like you said.
He's not his bread and butter.
But yeah, but it's not like, I mean, Malik Beasley is there to shoot. That's his one job. So with Lonnie, I kind of see him I think he's going to get into a game if it's a blowout. Like, again, game 3 could have been a nice time for him to get in and just kind of get his feet warm. But I don't see him coming in like a second quarter of a game, like close game to try to get minutes unless injuries were to happen. But yeah, I think for now, Darvin's going to stick with Malik Beasley, but probably start taking away his minutes if he's not doing what he's supposed to do. And I don't expect to see Lonnie unless it's a blowout, but maybe if he can kind of get his feet wet and put in a few baskets at the end of the game, that can kind of get his confidence back up and going to maybe contribute later in the postseason.
And if we take the Roy Hachimura route, you see Roy just needed one DMP to like become a superstar. So technically at this rate, Lonnie Walker is going to become an MVP.
Yeah, he's at 100 DMP.
Future right? Yeah. Finals MVP.
Exactly. Yeah.
This year, Lonnie's going to average 30 points in the finals.
All right, so we're going to wrap up on this quickly. Give me your prediction for tonight. Give me a score. What do you got, Noah?
Always put us on the spot with these. All right. I'm going to say Lakers are winning tonight. I know they're 4.5 right now favorites. I think they're going to cover. I'm going to say Lakers 111 Grizzlies. They got a 111 last. Okay. Lakers 109, Grizzlies 102.
Noel?
I'm going to go Lakers 102 and Lakers, Lakers 102, Grizzlies 95.
All right.
Going Lakers 105, Grizzlies 99.
All right, so we all got Lakers by 6 or 7.
Yeah, man, I said Lakers in 5 for this. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Lakers 24-8 podcast. Let us know down below. Give us your predictions for tonight's pivotal game 4. Let us know down below. Also, do you like Ham's rotations? Do you want to see Lonnie Walker over Malik Beasley? Give us all your Laker takes down below in the comment section. My name is Doug McCain. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at DMAC_LA. To my left, Mr. Noah Cameras. Go follow him. Read all of his stuff at alllakers.com. To my right, Mr. Noel Sanchez, bringing that fire, Young Lotto. You can follow him on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Noise by Noel. And if you haven't subscribed to the channel, too, hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. And until next time, go Lakers.
It's a parade inside my city. Yeah.